Here we go. We're off to the Ramah. The Ramah, Rav Moshe Isserles. Why did I say Isserles? Because he belonged to Isser. Right? There were a few Gedolim that we know of that were named after their mothers or someone, or their fathers, right? One of them was the Ramah. Right? His father was named with Isser, therefore he's called Isserles. There were no surnames, there were no last names. Another one was the Bach. His mother was Sarah.
Sarkis.
So his name became Sarkis, but he's Sarakez, belongs to Sarake. And another one was the Be'er Agoyla. Who's the Be'er Agoyla? Marsha was Adels, yeah? Mirenu Harav, Shloima, Shmuel. Shmuel Adels. And the last one is the Be'er Agoyla. Be'er Agoyla was Rav Moshe. Many people pronounce it Rav Kash. He wasn't Rav Kash. Be'er Agoyla on the side of the, right? He was Rivkis. His mother was Rivka, and he was Rivkis. So that's why we call him Rav Moshe Isserles, but let's be normal, Rav Moshe Isserles. Okay? He was born in Krakow. So now we've been doing the Beis Yosef for the past 3 weeks, and this is really a massive shift. We're now entering Poland. Now, Poland at the time, there was no Torah really in Poland. All the Rishonim lived in France, lived in Germany. All the Ashkenazi Gedolim of the Rishonim time, Rishonish times, were not in Poland. They were in Germany, they were in France. Now, Poland really got on the map thanks to one Gadol. His name was Yaakov Polak. Yeah, hence the name. He was a Polak. Yeah, he goes and he starts the first yeshiva in Poland. Okay? Yaakov Polak, and he was the person who many people have heard about this new form of limud called pilpul. What was pilpul? Pilpul was literally, it was for the fittest of the minds, they would take every single Gemara and just like rapid fire, lightning speed, trying to find every single reference in every single Gemara, and then try to see in every single step of the Shak Levitaria of every single Gemara, try to match them all up and just build these tremendously eye-popping shtiklach Torah to try to piece everything together and find one thread that will weave through the entire Shas. And many of it, which, again, the people who opposed it down the line, this was one of their main claims, it was predicated on their own hanachos. And it was predicated on whatever they decided, how they interpreted the Gemara, which wasn't necessarily the proper pshat in the Gemara, but it fit. So that was pilpul. It was started by Yaakov Polak, and it really took hold. His Talmud was of Shalom Shachne. Shalom Shachne, again. In Yiddish, we're going to get to in a few weeks, the Beis Shmuel wrote a pirush on names. He wrote for, we need to know how to spell names and what names are for Gittin, for Ksubis. We need to know how to spell every name. So Shachna always goes with Shalom. Yeah, Yitzchak Isaac, right? Shalom Shachna. Shloim is Zalman. Zalman is Yiddish for Solomon. I never realized that one until a few years ago. Yeah, so Rav Shalom Shachna was the Talmud of Rav Yaakov Polak, and his son-in-law, Talmud, and who eventually became his son-in-law, was the Ramah. So here we are, we're literally at the beginning of Polish Yiddishkeit, which had the biggest mark over the past 400 years, 500 years. From then, from Yaakov Polak's times until World War II, it was one of the main centers of Yiddishkeit. Obviously, Ukraine and Russia, but Poland was right up there. Definitely, in the 1600s and 1700s, it was the place. So now, again, but we're not going to get into all the nitty-gritty of the Polish kingdom. It had different rulers, different kings, and it was split up differently over each time. But the Ramah was born in the year Shin Tzadi. I'm going to tell you a cool klal. What is Shin Tzadi? No. What is Shin Tzadi in CE? What?
So it's probably 90 something.
1530, exactly. How do you know? 1240. Amazing. So he knows the trick. Okay, great. You can go. we spoke about this. So 1240 is whenever you see a Hebrew date, if it's within the fifth thousandth, which generally most dates are, that you're going to see until you get to like the Gaonim or the early, early Rishonim. So it's always going to be 1240 plus whatever date you see. So Shin Sadi is 390 plus 1240, 1530. Okay, remember it for the rest of your life. It's so worthwhile because you just see all these dates and they mean nothing. Now you have it, 1240. 1240 plus whatever the date is. So he's born in 1530. So putting into perspective, that puts him 42 years younger than the Beis Yosef, who eventually becomes his counterpart. 42 years apart. Beis Yosef was born in 1488. Yeah. Okay. So he lives in Krakow, and so the Beis Yosef was right. Beis Yosef came out first. So the Beis Yosef came out in multiple parts. So it's going to get a little tricky. It's going to get a little confusing because the story goes that the Rama was about to print the equivalent, and then he stopped. And he deferred to the Beis Yosef. Beis Yosef, if he was 42 years his elder, and the first, if I recall correctly, I have to double check this.
Shulchan Aruch, man.
Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch, yeah, no, but he wrote a documentation also. Documentation, which is the equivalent of a Beis Yosef, right? So, if the Beis Yosef started printing his farm when he was about 50, so I doubt an 8-year-old Moshe Isserles was putting out his farm already. So you have to clarify exactly what point which Sefer came out and how old the Rama was. And again, this will be homework. I'll happily accept the task of the homework. We'll get back to you next week. We're gonna have to do a part two on the Rama anyway. So we're in Krakow. We're in Krakow. He ended up becoming the son-in-law of Reb Shalom Shachna, and he then writes Svarim. Yeah, we're gonna skip. He clearly was a masmin. He definitely, put himself and was very focused on his learning. That's usually when you speak about gedolim, that's the given. And contrary to what people try to, many of them were very skilled and had natural minds that were well beyond the general masses. So some gedolim were not known for their smarts, and they wrote it on themselves. But generally speaking, many gedolim were gifted. And they were, but that doesn't mean there's nothing to glean from them, because the same focus that they put towards their learning, we could towards ours. But yes, they were definitely gifted, and they were not run-of-the-mill. So he's in Krakow, and he goes and he marries Reb Shalom Shachna's daughter. She ends up being Nefteres, and then he marries someone, Katz, whose brother-in-law was... not the Smichas Chachamim, I always blank out. So he ended up marrying a second time, and he had his own children. So what were his farm? Let's move on to his farm and his personality. His farim, he wrote Teres Chatos. Teres Chatos was a pirish on Isser V'Heter. In Yonei Yoredeya, Isser V'Heter, Teres Chatos. Basically, he was trying to, give a summary. Because at that time, the Pirushim on Isser V'Heter was the Isser V'Heter. What do you know? The Isser V'Heter, written by Rabbeinu Yoina. There were two Rabbeinu Yoinas. And then there was the Shari Dura, written by Yitzchak Dura, Midura, who was the Talmud of the Merami Rutenberg. A Talmud Chaver, or a counterpart with the Rush. Because the Rush was also a Talmud of the Merami Rutenberg. So these were Rishonim. They were very lengthy. Teres HaBayis, the Rashba, this for the Sfardim. Teres HaBayis, who wrote to sum up all Hilchos Isser V'Heter and everything in between, from the Gemara to bottom line at his stage. And then after that, it was like, go and go through the sugya. So the Rama was trying to, bring it down and bring it more concise and more concentrated. So he wrote Teres Chatos. So, like we mentioned before, in regard to the Shulchan Aruch, he got a lot of pushback. We mentioned already one week, the Maral's older brother, Reb Chaim, who wrote a Sefer called Sefer HaChaim. He was not so happy, and his intro they printed the new ones, and the new Teres Chatas in the Zichron Aaron version, the black one. So there's a, in the very, very back, they put it all the way in the back, there's an intro called Vikuach Mayim Chaim. Yeah? It's written by Reb Chaim Achi HaMaral, Maral Miprag, and he goes to town against the Rama, saying that it's a disservice because now you are ensuring that no one will know anything because no one's going to learn the sugya, and you're handicapping people, giving them a silver platter. You're thinking you're servicing them, you are hurting them. And the Marshal, who is his cousin, not clear how, the Marshal and the Rama were related. They refer to the Yamshel Shlomo, the Shlomo Luria, who's also called the Marshal, who's a drop older than the Rama. They refer to themselves, each other, as She'eri, She'er Basari. They were related. So he also was very upset at his cousin, his relative, for writing such a work. Because the Yamshel Shlomo, which we're going to get to in his own week, he was a staunch supporter of learning Be'ion. So Teres Chatas is not going to fare so well to the Marshal. He does. They actually had correspondence. Now, and then you get to see, you know, some good family. I don't want to use the word beef, but if I wouldn't avoid that word, I would use that word. So, then, where are we? Teres Chatas, and then he also wrote Darkei Moshe, which is a pirush on the tour. And his you know, MO, his goal and magama is to integrate all the Ashkenazi Rishonim that the Beis Yosef did not give the same limelight to. That's why he goes and he quotes you the Mordechais, and he goes and he quotes you some Tosfos that the right in the Maril. He's very lots of deference to the Maril, who was the father of Ashkenazi Psak in Germany, who was literally at the border of the German Ashkenazi Rishonim Achronim cutoff. Reb Yaakov, he has a last name actually. I don't recall. Yeah, no. Maril. Maral is Reb Yehuda Lowy. Reb Yehuda Lowy, that's the Maral. The Maril is Reb Yaakov, I don't remember. Okay, I'll get back to you. So, moving on, where are we? We're now, he wrote Darkei Moshe, and then he goes and he writes the Mappa. Right? What's the Mappa? The tablecloth. So he wrote a tablecloth. Because he's in deference to the Shulchan Aruch, he goes and he makes a tablecloth to beautify this set table. And that's... Yes. He has Akdama 2, Darkei Moshe, he has Akdama 2, Rama, he has Akdama 2, Teres Chatas, I believe. He also wrote a sefer called Mechir Yayin, which supposedly has a story that he wrote in a day. He was stuck somewhere and he didn't have any svarim, so he wrote a pirush on Megillas Esther, right? When I'm stuck in a day, I would love to do that, I happen not to. But the Rama, this is what he did when he was stuck. He wrote a pirush on Megillas Esther called Mechir Yayin. And what else do we have? We have Tshuvas Rama, but it's very unclear. There's a few famous Tshuvas Ramas quoted throughout Halacha, in Hilchos Nida, and Yerideya, and Nisav Heter, and it's not clear who he's quoting, because sometimes he quotes from the Rama, which means it wasn't penned by him necessarily. So again, you have these things like the Nekudas HaKesef, very often in Yerideya, he quotes from the Shach. It was his son, Reb Moshe, Reb Moshe HaKoyen, finished off many parts of Nekudas HaKesef, and then he quotes from Adoni Avi Umoiri, the Shach, but the other parts of the Nekudas HaKesef is written by the Shach himself. You just have to know that. So the Rama, I don't know. You can look in the newer versions. They have full Hakdamas trying to decipher who actually wrote Tshuvas Rama. Where are we? We have 2 minutes left. So where are we going to go? I'll tell you, he was a more interesting person than you think. Because, number one, he deviated from his Rebbeim, in a sense. His Rebbeim were all into Pilpul. The Rama, you learn his Svarim, there's no Pilpul going on. It's Pshat. he's going a libra de Hilchasa, Darkei Moshe, and even in Teres Chatas, it's very pshat oriented, and he has a goal to get to the sugis alibi de Hilchasa, which in that regard he was in line with the Marshal, right? But one of the things the Marshal goes to town about is that the Ramah, again, no machloikas, you know, today you can get a very heated machloikas started very fast about learning outside secular knowledge. Does it have a value? Is it a necessity? Is it a negative thing? Must you equip yourself and your children with that knowledge, or should you deliberately run from it? This is nothing new. The Ramah was very knowledgeable in astrology. Was very knowledgeable in, he actually, a famous history sefer that we have today, it's called the Tzemach David. He goes through lots of history. Now, between me and you, we're here to learn about the Gedolim. There's very few history svarim from people. The Chida, Tzemach David, there's Shalshalas HaKabbalah. There's not so many. Academics and many conservative and many, you know, maskilim, they wrote prolifically on history. So that's really just an observation. I don't know where to go with it, and I would love to hear your thoughts. But there's something there. Why no gedolim really promoted the learning of history? That's a much broader topic, and there's a lot written about it. We mentioned the tshuva from Yaakov Hillel, and the Netziv writes about it, and the Maariv Chayyim writes about it, about what's that function of learning history. But it's definitely debatable. So the Ramah actually charged his Talmud to write a history book, which already sheds a little insight into who the Ramah was. And the Marshal actually writes in one tshuva, he didn't like one of his wording. So he writes to him, instead of spending time learning astrology, maybe you could learn some dikta. Again, these are gedolim, so like it sounds like, wow, what a jab. But they really had, he had something that he cared about. Many of us, especially with Western philosophy, it's like, oh, everyone has to respect and let him do whatever he wants. But if you really care and you really bothers you, so you'll say whatever you feel needs to be addressed. So that's the Ramah part one. We're going to have to get to him part two next week. We're going to go through more Svarim and his style, and to be continued.